tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads from over 200 countries and your number one source in after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
There we go. Hi, AfterBuzzers. This is Sarah Stratton, and we are about to break down episode 2 of the final season of Boardwalk Empire, The Good Listener. So, who do I have across from me?
Kevin Undergaro, and it's just tough every week.
I know.
Knowing that we've
you
got so few
You threw me into
left.
This seat, and I'm, like, so confused by this episode that I don't really know how we're going to make it through it. Also, just to shout it out, within the next couple of minutes, we've got a special guest coming on, John Ellison Conley. You guys are going to recognize him. He is playing the Commodore.
1890s Commodore.
The 1890s Commodore. So he's going to be calling in a few, and we're going to get some good questions, insight with him. And then, of course, we're going to do your normal breakdown of tonight's episode. So before he gets online, maybe we should talk a little bit about 1890s flashback Nucky time zone. Kevin, how are you feeling about this?
I always get deeply depressed when we go back to the 1890s.
Just because he has such a sad childhood?
Yes. And but I compliment them on making the father multi-layered. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not this, you know, it would be easy to say Irish Catholic, abusive, alcoholic dad. No, mm-hmm. He's not that. He's troubled.
Family troubles. You can tell the state of Atlantic City, and I can see the trajectory of that. As opposed to episode one, I thought episode one for the 1890s was very clear at why they were showing us, because it really related to where Nucky has come, like how he's grown and right. How his childhood affected his business practice, how it affected him as a person. And to me, that really tied in last week. Like, we'd go from 1890 scene to a board meeting, and you could see the direct correlation of that relationship affecting where he was now. This week, not seeing it as much. This week, I like the 1890s stuff. I enjoy it. I think that the storyline going on there is layered, is interesting. It's making me more curious about the Commodore and about his dad rather than about Nucky, though.
What makes you curious?
I just, because we're seeing, like, I used to totally dislike the Commodore. And when, like, they were saying, oh, hello. Hello, Mr. John.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. We were just talking about your storyline a little bit.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is Sarah.
And then what'd you come up with?
Well, I was saying that I'm becoming very interested in the Commodore because I was kind of the similar feeling as Nucky's dad, where the original Commodore that we were introduced to, I thought was just a bad guy. And mm-hmm. he's getting layers right now, and it's becoming very interesting, but I'm wondering how it's going to tie in more to this season.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good question, but, you know, you get to see the whole point, I think, of the flashbacks is you see the different influences on young Nucky. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give too much away, but I'm going to go south a little bit. I'm going to be less of a good guy as the season progresses, I think.
Oh.
Okay. I guess this is Kevin Undergaro, and I'm a huge fan of yours. I think the way you are, the way you're capturing a young Dabney Coleman's version of the Commodore is phenomenal. And I guess before we get too deep, I have to ask you, did you do a lot of studying of the past seasons to get the mannerisms down? Because you nailed it.
Oh, thanks so much. I mean, I did. And talk about, like, the best job in the world, getting to watch Dabney Coleman.
Right.
And the show.
Right.
You know, I mean, because I was a huge Dabney Coleman fan as a kid. I mean, all those movies came out when I was a child, like Tootsie and 9 to 5 and War Games and all those things that he was so fantastic in. And I had loved him on Boardwalk Empire, but I did go back and watch them the first two seasons again to prepare for this one. And, you know, I mean, what a treat to get to do that even is, you know, that's a good job.
But you nailed it in a way where I've seen flashbacks. I've seen other actors play older actors and sometimes seen it done well. And, but not like this.
Did you study? Like, what did you, what really inspired you from his performance or from the character that we got to know in seasons one and two?
Well, I mean, just being a fan of his for all those years, I mean, to be honest, before I studied season one and two, I went into audition for a different character.
Can you tell us who?
I went into audition for Pat Halligan, who's the guy that I hit up for money for Atlantic City in season one.
Okay.
Whose hat blows off, and he gives him the little candy, and then they have that beautiful scene where Nolan, young Nucky, keeps one of the lemon candies and then gives it to his sister.
Yeah, with the $50 bill and everything. That's a beautiful scene.
But I auditioned for that character initially. Actually, I didn't even get to audition. I went in to do that, and Meredith was like, you know what? I want you to come back tomorrow. And I had a mustache, and she was like, I feel like you, I haven't thought this about you before, but I feel like you remind me a little bit of like a Dabney Coleman thing. Can you do that? And I was like, you kidding? That guy is emblazoned in my memory forever because of all of these performances that I loved. And so I went home and had watched Tootsie that night. and then, you know, did a little bit of a Dabney Coleman thing the next day, and then just worked on the part, and the sounding like him and all of that was always just trying to sort of channel him. I didn't really study like specifically movements that he did or anything, but I just have always enjoyed him so much that I feel like it kind of was in there.
But John, was this back in season one they asked you to do this, or was
talking about the recent hat we had last episode,
right,
where he finds the $50 bill?
Wow, so
he auditioned for that man. That's correct, right?
Which I can see you doing because I can see the the look is perfect. But good. You know what? Good casting director, like somebody had a good eye. You know,
Meredith Tucker. I mean, also how great is Nolan as young Nucky? He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's
all
great.
These characters, it's a really tricky thing. All these characters that have already been created. And Oakes, the kid who plays young Eli.
Were you a fan of this show like we were from season one?
Yes.
Ah, great.
Yes. The show is always, I mean, so beautiful and so beautifully told, and the actors are so great. It's a thrill to be a part of that team.
We always talk about here, we're a big fan of the production design, of all the effort they put into, like, the music, the song choices. How much of that is apparent when you're on set? Like, how much are they filling you in on kind of the historical references and all of the decoration and the music that they're putting into this as well?
Well, the music is harder to know about because, you know, they add that in mostly later. And by the way, the really beautiful sort of haunting soundtrack, That's not the song, but the that they're using in the flashback.
It's crazy.
David Yazbek wrote that, who is I'm a huge fan of and have worked with and think that guy is a genius. So, and I think it really adds. But their production design, I mean, when you watch that pilot episode and you know that all of that was shot in New York, it's kind of incredible. All the Havana stuff.
Crazy.
You know, and then like tonight's, like at Nucky's childhood home, all that stuff. It's incredible. The locations they find and the way that they make them look, the costumes, John Dunn, Emmy nominated again this year. And I mean, they put so much into all of that and that attention to detail. Everyone is aware of that on set because we're all wearing these extraordinary clothes and in these locations that, I mean, it might not look great off camera, but everything that is on camera looks extraordinary.
Yeah,
that's a crazy thing. You're sitting in a room that's not made up and covered in a tarp and whatever, and then you walk around the corner where it's about to be filmed, and it looks like you're in, you know, 1884 or 1897 or 1931.
So you're not working with CGI. I mean, like an incredible amount of CGI. I mean, I know we have it on the show, but you're able to come onto a set that really paints that picture.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that you know are going to be CGI'd in later, but they do such a great job of creating the atmosphere that you don't have to do much of that. You know, there's like I had to pretend that there was ocean below me at one point when there was sand, but that's not a huge, you know, they've also already built in all of these incredible, I mean, the extras, there are hundreds of extras in some of these scenes, and they're all just impeccably dressed, and it's really, their attention to detail is pretty incredible.
So were you on a set, or were you at a practical location?
Well, I was never in the studio. I was on all locations, but some of them, like the boardwalk location, was where I did most of my stuff, which is on Rockaway Beach. But like tonight's stuff, the Nucky's childhood home was out on Staten Island. That was actually my first day on set. I shot episode 2 before episode 1 because of some weather issues and stuff like that. But that scene out in the woods was just out in Staten Island.
Amazing.
I love that.
That's such
And
you're talking about, I know from your background, you have been in the industry for so long. You've been in film, from TV, from theater. I believe you started in theater, correct?
Oh, yeah. That's still most of what I've done. You know, I'm trying to get a chance to do more different things, and it's really... And there are a bunch of theater people on this show, too. That's
what I wanted to bring up, because I feel like most of the research I've done, when I do pull up the actors who come out and join this class, it's a lot of people with a classical theater background. And how do you think that affects this show?
Well, I think part of that is the New York thing. And I think as more shows are being shot in New York, you're seeing more of that. But also because... And like Howard Korder, who's one of the main writers, is a theater. He has a big theater background. And these characters, although they're historically based, they don't speak the way that we do in our contemporary lives. And there is a kind of size that I think people want that and use of language that you certainly learn how to do in the theater. In a way that a person with a television or film background exclusively might not have had to deal with, although certainly people with only film and television backgrounds have dealt with that. But certainly if you've created a career in the theater, you probably have had to deal with the kind of language and sort of heightened circumstances that
I think that's actually that most a very of the good characters point. Do. That's a very good point, and especially because a lot of theater does delve also into period pieces. And so with the heightened language, that's obviously included. Going back into, are you doing any other theater productions right now?
I'm not. My wife has just started a really cool new Sarah Rule play that's happening at Lincoln Center. They're in rehearsals now. But I'm kind of taking a break from the theater and trying to do more film and television stuff.
Why did you decide to do that?
I've always tried to go back and forth, but I did 3 shows in the theater that I loved so much with great people, but back to back to back. And 8 shows a week of the same material when you do it for basically about 2 years straight, even when it's stuff that you love, you do then feel like, or at least I felt, I'd like to do something where I do different things every day.
It's a different mentality.
This has been a great opportunity to do that and to learn more about that.
How is it coming on to? Did you find a difference in the set or a difference with the writers that they had to have such a huge jump in time for the overall series? Did that come up in conversations, or did you notice that there were storylines that they were having to compact or shorten? Because as an audience, we're watching it, and now everything's moving so quickly because it did become the final season. Was that something that was talked about on set?
It wasn't talked about on set, but I think everyone knew that they threw themselves, they posed themselves some really big challenges this season. going back in time for the first time, jumping ahead so many years, having to wrap everything up, and doing, you know, the different time periods. I mean, there were days that we were shooting two different episodes the same day with two different time periods, and that's a lot to juggle. But I think, and Tim Van Patten was talking about this one time, where he was just saying, you know, we, and Terry Winter was talking about it too. They felt like, because we're going to end this, let's sort of take the biggest swing we can. We're going to try and really wrap it up the right way by sort of not doing any of the safe choices, but trying to comprehensively tell this as well as we can. And then the choice to do it in 8 episodes is another thing. It's like,
yeah, by the way, John, like we
challenge level, but you know, I think they're up for it.
We ran so much about it because we're just blown away that we have to wrap this up in 8 weeks. But I want to ask you about working with Terrence and Tim. You know, for mm-hmm. us, watching Tim's work, seeing his work in the past with The Sopranos, and seeing what he does here, I'd like to ask you what it's like to, as an experienced actor, what it's like to work with him as a director and the difference. And then we should talk about Terrence Winter. But I always know when I see Tim's name credited on an episode, I'm always like, okay, we're good. We're going to see something very special. But can you speak to working with him?
Well, Tim directed 2 of the episodes this season. He directed the first and the last. And tonight's director, Alan Coulter, I also think is an extraordinary director. He directed this episode 2 and 7 as well. But all of the directors are wonderful. I mean, obviously, you don't get to do that.
Exactly. We haven't seen a bad episode.
We're blown away continually every week. It's just the reason I just know with Tim because he took over after, you know, Scorsese did the first one, and we just know his work from the past. So that's why I asked him. Like, there's got to be something really special about this guy.
Well, absolutely. His attention to detail, I mean, is extraordinary, and he took longer to shoot episode 1 and episode 8 than I think, and I wasn't around obviously for all of it since I'm only in the past storyline, but I think more time was spent on those episodes. There were more different kinds of shots, and there was a willingness to, like, we're just going to keep doing this mm-hmm. until we get it right. That doesn't always happen on a TV set, and I feel like that actually happened throughout this season. But other sets that I've worked on have had a more, like, well, we just have to move on.
Yeah, we've got to get it done. Make our day. Get it in the can. We've got to make our day. Right.
Right. Right. And that's that's not an unreasonable thing. There's obviously a reason for that. But on this show, and I think Tim is one of the main sort of exemplars of that, is like, we're going to do it. And we're going to do it right. And we're going to feel good about what we've got, and I think it really shows and has always shown in the quality of the show that they put out.
100%. And then let's talk about Terrence Winter. He's somebody mm-hmm. to me that's we know Matthew Weiner from Mad Men, amazing, and
right.
we know Sons of Anarchy has Kurt Sutter, and we know Breaking Bad has, I'm having a brain freeze right now, guys, help me,
Vince Gilligan.
Thank you. And I feel like Terrence Winter is right there with them and arguably could even be better than some of them, you know. And because the show doesn't have the popularity, it certainly has a critical acclaim, I feel like he's mm-hmm. he's not mentioned with them. Maybe he doesn't get so much into the PR like those other guys do, but I want to hear more what it's like to work with him.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get a lot of one-on-one or time with him. He reached out to me a couple of times and was very generous and said nice things, but he wasn't usually on set.
Mm-hmm. But he reached out to you. That's amazing. Tell me what that was.
Yeah.
How that went down.
I mean, honestly, it's one of those, like, we had the premiere night of the a showing of the first episode and the red carpet and all that stuff, which was really cool, I have to say. I mean, we all say, like, oh, I don't get into it for the red carpet and all that, but it's a lot of fun.
And bless you for admitting that, you know, being human. No, because I know that, by the way, when I can work with actors, I love working with theater actors because you're doing those eight shows a week, you do the repetition, you nail a character like nobody's business, there's just such a discipline involved, and you don't get the big takeaway that a TV or film star usually gets. And so there's just a humility, there's a work ethic involved with a theater actor, and I think that's why we see so many of them on this show and knocking out of the park every week. But, you know, that being said, to work with Terrence Winter and for him to reach back to you, it just says so much about this show.
Yeah. Well, and about the whole organization. And
right.
And that's, I think, one of the things that you learn as you exist in this business is good companies are built because the people at the top are, you know,
yeah.
Like if they're great people at the top, then everybody below them steps up and is on their best behavior. And I feel like this is one of those companies where you feel appreciated and lucky to be there and like we're all, you know, doing the good work. And so I really value all of that. It was a really great place to work. I'm sorry that it's over. But.
We're all sorry that it's coming to an end.
Yeah.
Trust me, like all of the fans here, we have such a love for this show and for everyone they bring on, including yourself, because it does.
Oh,
there's so much time and every scene, as you point out, every moment is given the ability to be made right and well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's attention to detail just over and over again, from the casting to the scripts to every set, which is why we love it. We break down the full show. We're about to get into that. You are more than welcome to stay on with us. We'd love to hear your opinion. If you've watched this week's episode, we just break it down, talk about everyone's storyline. We'd love to have you stay on the line if you have time. If not, I have like two more questions and we can let you go.
I think I could stay on. How long are you?
We talk for a while. We'll probably talk.
But you know what? Feel free to hang up whenever we'll carry you from there. But
okay.
it would be fun to have
I'll
chime
stick
in.
Around, and then maybe at some point you'll be like, hey, what happened to John?
And we'll be like, John.
And we roll. That's what we do. We roll.
Yeah. We just chat about it. We talk about everything we saw this week. And before we get into that, I do want to ask you, because you are a fan of this show, which storylines were you most excited for this season? Or do you have any favorite characters or moments from the previous seasons that you've watched?
I mean, truthfully, I mean, of course I'm excited for my own stuff because I want to see, you know, how did it turn out? But I'm in a way, I'm least excited about it because that's the only part that I know. I only got my scenes. So as a fan, I'm like, I need to, what happened with Chalky? What's going to happen with, you know, like Kelly MacDonald? What's, you know, like all of these stories are so, I want to know, because especially knowing that it has to wrap up this year. And Eli and Nucky and everybody, I mean, I was glad we got to see Eli tonight because I've been like wondering, you know, what's going to happen with him and Van Alden.
Exactly. I think this week in particular, we got a lot of names, a lot of new scenarios just kind of thrown at us. I was like, this is in preparation for all of this season. We got so many intros, so many things to kind of, I feel like it was like, heads up, people. All this stuff is coming your way. Get ready.
Last week was, okay, guys, we're cutting 7 years into the future. We're cutting 7 years ahead, and we're going to have some cutbacks back to the 1890s. Great. This week was about, and now you're dealing with, okay, so we've established that, but now we're dealing with all these other characters that we're going to see for the next, fasten your seatbelts, next six episodes, this is what we can deal with.
Episode one was very much like what we love about this show. Let's do some beautiful shots. Let's show us these are some of our favorite characters in different scenarios and really it felt artistic. It felt true. It was at a very nice pace. And then this week it was like, but we have to prepare you because we've got a lot coming. And almost like it felt like to me, it was like, these are the names that I now need to research because you're going to have your history need to be caught up a little bit. I mean, I want to start talking a little bit. I want to start with Chicago. I think we're going to break this down. We're going to talk about it by locations.
Okay.
Just because, you know, we can kind of group people together geographically. So Chicago, we get Al Capone, who we didn't get much of last week at all, except for in the beginning and the end where we just got those, you know, our catch-up flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Capone making quite the entrance.
And
he's just the whole celebrity
and
now.
And the press is mentioning Little Caesar, Public Enemy. And I know, John, I am almost sure you're familiar with those movies, correct?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right.
Sorry, you're a little young.
Public Enemy, yeah.
All right, well, that's good. Commendable.
I'll take that.
Commendable. TCM usually plays them in February during Oscar Movie Month, just throwing it out to our fans.
I took my gangster movie class at USC.
But there you go, so you get it. But I love the fact that he is drinking in his celebrity. He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's laughing it off.
I thought it was interesting.
And that character, the Capone in Boardwalk, he's always been so great, but like it is. It's fascinating to see him sort of towards the end where it's really clearly going to, you know, like he's living it in a very full way. And then also in the same episode, introducing Elliot Ness. Like, I think that's great.
Now, you know,
Tim True Frost, Mr. Prez.
Throwing it out to both you guys about Elliot Ness. Now, we have all been reared to know in folklore that Elliot Ness is the one who brings out Capone.
Mm-hmm.
However, many historians believe that it really didn't go down that way, that years after Capone was busted, Hollywood producers wanted to create the Untouchables, and they knew a little bit about Elliot Ness, and they decided to make him the name and build it up.
Built up, exactly. Was what
so,
I
sure. Mean, John, have you heard that as well?
Yes, absolutely. And I honestly don't know what the truth of that is.
I don't either. I'm a historian.
None of us know. So now it comes down to what we think they're going to make the truth of it as.
I'm
right.
Because the show seems like it's been so accurate, I was blown away that they went there. That they're like, boom, here's Elliot Ness. So I'm just saying, it was interesting that they took that stand.
And because they're so accurate, I'm thinking they're going to try and find somewhere in the middle ground. Of what
to show that he's not—he wasn't the one who put the nail in the coffin.
Exactly. I think they're going to try and kind of make sense of what folklore says, what history. Like they're going to try and weave a story that's true.
I mean, I've always trusted these guys. Like I'm so in for the ride, John. As you know, I'm like I drink all the Kool-Aid. Like these guys, they've done such a great job weaving this all together. But I was taken back when I saw that.
One of the great things this show, I think, has always done is use the mythology that exists about these gangsters in this world and play into it, but also undercut it.
Yes.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like there's a chance that they'll build into the whole, and I don't know what they're going to do, but build into the whole Capone versus Elliot Ness story, but then also find a way to show, you know, that it's kind of bullshit. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. But.
You're allowed to say that.
You are. New media, baby.
We're talking about Boardwalk. We can go that way. No worries.
Yeah.
But we see Capone. And then on top of this, with Elliot Ness, let's talk about all the other storylines that are now tied to Chicago. Bringing back Eli, who we haven't seen, who's now...
A drunken Eli, right?
A fallen apart Eli.
Right.
An Eli who I really don't know... where he's grounded at all. He's been connected to Van Alden, I guess, for all this time. And he still has some sort of power, but no one acknowledges him anymore.
But you know what it seems like to me, if I may theorize?
Go right ahead.
This was a guy who was super close to his kids and his wife, and he's 6 years removed, and this is how he's dealt with it.
He's not, but he's...
Meanwhile, his son is like... trying to take over the world.
Oh my God! That's right.
Yeah.
A whole other layer.
But do you agree? Don't you think? Isn't that plausible that he's away from his family, and we know he family was everything to him. Mm-hmm. Everything. And right. Now it's he's been asked like 6 years ago to Chicago, do business out there. And yeah, this isn't the information age they're in. Not the information age we're in today where, you know, it's no big deal to be a few hours away in Chicago. No, back then it's like he's been 6 years away
he's
from his
banished.
Family.
Yeah. He's been banished from his family.
So you can see where he would sedate himself and just turn
he's
into
not,
alcohol.
He's not able to Skype with his kid.
Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is true. But his whole life is falling apart, even though he's still tied in to bootlegging.
Well, no, but it's falling apart, Sarah, because he's not – his family is the most important thing to Eli, and it's been removed. He's a family man.
Do you think he can get it back?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say, but just know that 6 years in the life of a child is an eternity. An 8-year-old now is 14 or a 10-year-old is 16 and, you know, so on. So, I mean, Willie is a whole other subject.
We're
going
to have to get into Willie separately.
But we know he had all those kids – mm-hmm. Beside Willie was the oldest, and we had the mother. I mean, his wife, right. You know, so he's been away. So you can see where I think that what that's most important to him, where that would just get to him.
Well, what we had, calling back to last season, where we're talking about the whole plot line of there was kind of the father battle between Eli and Nucky over Willie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that played out with now Eli being gone. Can we assume, based off of Nucky's conversation with Willie, that he did step up into that role. He did, for the past 6 years, kind of try and father Willie.
I think nobody won that war.
You think that...
No, nobody won that war, which would depress Eli. Willie's clearly gone off on his own, but he's also gone so rogue that we know, and I don't know if this screws up your topic board, but we see where he's...
Screwing up my topics,
okay,
Kevin.
But we see where he's not 100% loyal to
what
Nucky.
We know about Willie is that he is somehow operating his own game.
Yes.
Because he's not telling the complete truth to Nucky. He's not telling the complete truth
to
the authorities.
Right.
He's operating in his own mindset, which he's obviously created based on the fact that he's had this fallen apart family, but been intersected with the law, with the police, with bootlegging. He has this outside perspective where he's kind of removed himself and been able to watch everything. And now he gets to stand his own ground, make his own choices on how he wants to live in this world. But we, as the audience, I still don't know where that is.
Right. But in many ways, I feel like that's like Nucky. Mm-hmm. That's like a Nucky play, which is using sort of like, I'm a gangster, but also I take care of people. You know, like it's hard to define who I am. Like, it seems like he may have learned that
and
way of operating with the world.
True. And furthermore, opportunistic, Nucky, where he's not fully aligning himself with one side or the other. He's... Mm-hmm.
Well, we did get the line, I believe it was last week, where it was like, you have to have a way out.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in the position, he is in a powerful position, Willie is, where he does have different ways out, because he still has allegiances with other people. Versus when you lose that allegiance, like we look at other characters... bringing it back to Chicago, or no, that would be New York. I was going to bring up Tonino, who lost his allegiance and was searching for some sort of way out, and that just ends up with his downfall. Because how I look at it is Willie was the factor who played that right. He's playing people on both sides and keeping all of the information to himself. Versus if you have a character like Tonino, who's trying to play multiple sides, giving information to anyone and is not containing anything for himself, you're going to end up dead.
It's not going to work out well.
Exactly. Right. And we can dive into, do you want to dive more into Lansky, Meyer, Tonino?
Can of worms, open it up.
We have to, because this episode was a can of worms.
Yes.
That's literally names everywhere. And a lot of reveals. I felt like this episode really could have been one that was divided a little bit into two, because we were getting questions set up in the beginning, whether that was Lansky and Meyer being in allegiance, and we were getting the resolve of that by the end. So we got a lot of questions opened at the beginning of this episode and then answered by the end.
All right, so I'm a huge Nucky fan, so I get very nervous when I deal with Meyer and Lucky because historically, spoiler alert,
Sorry, guys.
Drop it for me,
Steven,
please.
You're about to get a spoiler alert notification. Get ready for your ears.
Spoiler alert.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Okay. So, we know that, Lucky and Meyer are going to live, and they're going to do a lot of... They have another whole other journey ahead of them into the 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. and even 60s, and, God, almost into the early 70s. So I get nervous when I see them go against Nucky, because I go, oh, my God, like... Nucky's my, I'm a Nucky fan. I'm trained to like he to me. He's the protagonist. I'm on the journey with mm-hmm. him. And when I see those guys powering up, I'm like against him. I get really nervous.
I guess I was just although the show has been so accurate, I guess with historic. I just believe they're not going to abandon Nucky and like feed him to Meyer and Luciana. I think that. He's not in as much danger.
I agree. I think he'll come out okay. I'm just saying I get nervous when I see those guys.
Take a deep breath.
All right. I'm good.
View them still as their little rugrat selves who are still making mistakes.
We joke. Rugrats, Muppet Babies. That's what we call them.
This is
but
what we
call...
But
they're growing up. They're growing up.
They are growing up. But they're still making mistakes. They're still getting caught. Nucky has figured them out because he is still on top.
Yeah, thank God.
It's funny how Nucky operates... on top, even though they're portraying him as not on the top of his game. He knows everything that's going on. He still has his connections, but he's obviously not doing too well because he's getting shut down by the Kennedy board group.
By the way,
right.
John and Sarah, Joe Kennedy, come on. That's awesome.
I told you, names
that is
on
awesome.
Names
right,
on
right
names.
To see Joe Kennedy, the master bootlegger, who got his kids into the White House. Pretty effing cool.
And I think he's coming back this season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great figure.
Do you like that scenario then? This whole, what was it? The corporation? The new, I believe they're making cereal?
That threw me a little bit for
threw
a loop.
Threw you off?
Yeah. So are we going to bring in the Kellogg's Corporation? That's all I could think of. Or CW Post?
I don't think it was Kellogg's. It was the Mayflower Grain Corp. Mayflower Grain Corp, which I am a little rusty on, we're going to have to get more information about because I don't know about the Mayflower Grain
Corp. We go up 10 minutes after we see the show. So we have, thank God, we're blessed to have amazing super fans, Michael August and several other fans who will write in and figure this stuff out for us.
We have a team of researchers, basically, who get a little more time than we do and then send us all the details of all the hidden gems that this show has.
I was going to say, thank goodness. I was so intimidated by everything that you guys were able to, you're like gleaning all of the history and everything from the episode. I was so impressed.
We try. Like, we love it. So we do try and know as much as we can. But we can't predict every song, every pamphlet, every hidden gem that this show has. So we do have wonderful fans who help us out. And we talk to us about it and bring, hopefully, as much of this show to life as we can.
I mean, I'm just so excited about Joe Kennedy. That's great.
Yeah, that's a great storyline.
Right?
It is a great storyline.
And it's so well executed. Mm-hmm.
I think, and it's also just interesting for me to have this kind of opposite scenario where Nucky is walking this line where half of his life is still so tied in to the gangsters, to the mob, and then half his life is trying to proceed forward, is trying to make a life
if Prohibition falls.
Yes, if Prohibition falls. Mm-hmm. And he's walking that line right in the middle, which is where this whole season is taking place, right in the middle of this. And you're trying to see if he is going to survive, if he is going to be able to balance these two or find a way out. So to me, it's interesting. It didn't throw me as much for a loop because it is what's giving Nucky trouble and, in a way, hope. Because if we just saw him only in the gangster realm, it's just about him right now being people trying to kill him. That's all we're getting.
Right.
He doesn't have any more goals on that end of his life. He doesn't have any more goals to, like, reopen up something that's illegal. He wants the legal way now.
Right.
So
right.
You need to have both. And so I wasn't thrown for it. I'm liking it. I'm also liking that it's giving him a hard time because we haven't seen him have to deal with as many of these people who don't want to be corrupt as before. And like that's going to bring Willie back. He's kind of in that world as well. And so I feel like Eli's been replaced with Willie completely.
Right.
for who is going to benefit.
Yeah. But Willie is more of a white collar Eli. You know, Eli's been the blue collar, kind of like the...
That's what I'm saying. Eli's been replaced. Yeah. He's been replaced. Where Nucky could have used to sometimes go to his brother to, like, get things done or, you know, kind of be the guy who passes things
but
off to.
Eli was honest with Nucky. Like, Willie, hold him back a little bit.
Eli didn't was not Nucky
back
the whole
day.
Time.
No, back in the day.
Yeah, back in the
originally,
day. But
originally.
Then, true. Originally, they were very good brothers, but then he completely lied to him for
he
a really long time.
Right.
Yeah.
So we don't want to confuse that. But I think that, so you think that Willie's just going to overstep Nucky then?
No, I think Willie's playing, I think he's playing a really smart game. I think if the Nucky way leads him to success, great. If the attorney general or the government leaves him to success, great. I don't feel like there's emotion involved where it's like, Uncle Nucky, I'm gonna get you for all these bad things you've done in the past. I think he's just being smart.
Okay. Yeah. That's a fair point. I want to talk a little bit more about Nucky because he was... Let's talk about the payoff between Tonino and Nucky. And I'm going to title him as Señor. And a little bit of the remembrance of Billy Kent. And how this played out towards the end of tonight's episode. Where we get Tonino obviously offering up his services to Nucky. He's this little... Not little. He's a large lost lamb. Who has backed himself into a corner because he's changed allegiances so many times. Right. And Nucky, what I took it as, Nucky went with his heart, not with his business prowess, went with his heart because there was some tie-in to Billy Kent's murder, or killing. I guess she wasn't murdered. It was an explosion. And that was the main reason why he stabbed this guy in the back and sent him off with a Havana note. How did you feel about that?
Well, I think it's clear that's why he did it. The filmmaker showed so many flashbacks that it was, okay, this is what's on his mind. It's not a business decision. It's this guy hurt the one person I loved, and he had to pay the price.
And he paid the price. And, I mean, at least Nucky did get some information out of him.
Got what he needed.
Yeah. He got needed. Now he holds this. He holds the key. He can totally expose Meyer and Lucky for what they are to Maranzano if he wants, but he doesn't have an allegiance with Maranzano.
I get fearful because spoiler alert, I know where those guys end up, so it's scary.
I don't know where Maranzano ends up.
No, I don't.
So, and you don't either. So we can make some
no.
No one knows about that yet. And right now, exactly. Nucky's the holder of the information. And who are his allies?
Okay, really quick, and I guess this is probably Mike August or some of our other fans.
Are you going to ask me trivia that I don't know off the top of my head?
No, you won't, but you know what? I bet you John will.
Oh, John, now you're being put on the spot.
Interesting comparison to Marcus Aurelius from Old Rome.
Which we also got last week.
And the counter of, more like Ben Franklin.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought it was cool because not only did it tie into last week, where it was, I believe, Maranzano who brought up Marcus Aurelius. So we got a tie in there. But, yeah, bringing in two more historical figures, I liked it.
I mean, I haven't had enough time to break down Marcus Aurelius versus Ben Franklin, but Ben Franklin is a pretty kick-ass character. I mean, this is a guy that was a Renaissance man who wasn't a leader, but he kind of sat back and he had tons of power.
Yes.
But he sat back and he had everyone else, you know, be in the lead role.
He's an idea man.
But
and
he was able to enforce those ideas. And he was toasted in other continents. And it's just interesting that where Marcus Aurelius was, you know, a leader of an empire, and Ben Franklin not so much, but we know electricity and so many other things.
John, how do you read into that reference, the Ben Franklin, the Marcus Aurelius? Do you have any insight for us?
I really don't. I mean, I feel like they've always done a great job of sort of leading storytelling points with references like that. And so I feel like it's an indicator of where we're headed in terms of the roles that those guys
get to play. But I believe it was, I think the line, in my memory at least, hinted at Nucky really idolizing Ben Franklin.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah. So Marcus Aurelius was a big emperor and also a big leader. Okay, fans, don't attack me. I don't have it all down about Marcus Aurelius, but I know Ben Franklin. And Ben Franklin was a part of the revolution, and he was a Renaissance man. But he was not the leader.
No.
He kind of sat back.
He was an opportunist.
Yes.
And a pleasure seeker.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. I'm more like Ben Franklin. Boom.
It was a good throw out there.
If you do the same thing you do today that you've done yesterday, you will get the same result. It was something like that Ben Franklin said. That's how cool he was. If you do something different, you'll get different results. I mean, anyway, I'm a big Ben Franklin fan. So
you like the reference because you're a big Nucky fan.
Loved.
So everything was good in your vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
So we've talked a lot about Chicago. We've talked about Evan from Lansky, Meyer. Do we want to dive more into Van Nelson Mueller, or do we want to go on to Jillian?
You have to talk about just briefly about
Eli and their money drops.
You just know
Van Alden.
Van Alden is getting ready to go.
Yeah,
I mean getting ready to go, yes. Like to just kick some ass.
I mean, you've got Eli and Van Alden in this partnership. To me, is very interesting because they're both being positioned as they're not at the top of their game. Eli. Drunk, torn apart in a family. Van Alden seems to despise his wife instead of love her and seems kind of fed up on a few things.
Well, no, that's a great character arc with the wife who went from this...
Lovey-dovey.
Lovey-dovey and was great gangster in the background, making the moves for him, supportive wife, being his number one, to now she's smoking cigarettes. And he's like, that's not ladylike. You see she's over it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. And eventually...
And he's about to explode. He's got... You just feel that.
Exactly.
My boy, yeah.
You see it in every scene. I was just getting scared in the elevator scene alone.
Right.
Where, like, every floor, there was that weird sound effect where I was like, he's going to shoot everyone.
You don't want to be alone with
him,
yeah.
He's going to shoot everyone in 2 seconds.
Right.
And I feel like it's just building up in the next couple
episodes.
We know
we have two children now. You know,
we had two children. Now they're grown a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just—it's just tension.
His storyline's just straight tension. Will he snap on her eventually? You think?
I think that she has tension of her own, and she's like a pressure point for him.
But she's also been in control.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to turn on her. I don't think he's going to turn on her.
Okay.
I think that today, when we heard that sometimes it's easier to despise than to love. I think he's going to learn to love, and it's going to work out better. Something along those lines. I also really like her.
John, Sarah's highly educated from USC, so I always yield. I yield.
I also make predictions
like
that
you.
Are no way
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, but I yield.
I try.
I yield.
I just, like, imagine where I want the season to go, and I put it out there so that it will give the energy to go my way. That's how my predictions function. But I
that
do
makes
want
sense.
Exactly, right? Put it out into the universe. But we do need to talk a little bit about the fact that they stole money from another one of Al Capone's.
Yeah.
And it just gets put in this pile without even a nod.
Nothing, because Al's so on top of the world.
That he doesn't
He's
eat.
Like, yeah, whatever.
It doesn't care. It's only a problem if it's not there.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. How great you do. It's not about the good. It's just if it's not there, then you're killed. That's my impression. But I don't think that's the end of that storyline either, because you can't just leave it like that. You can't leave it with people murdered in the street and never acknowledge it again. And we did have a guy get away.
Right.
So those are things to note. I think from that, we're supposed to get Al Capone has enough money to not notice $20,000. It's math. It's chump change now. It used to be the most important thing, and now chump change is more important about the 2-inch cuffs or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also going to get the tensions building. Now can we go on to one of my favorite characters, Jillian?
Yes. You and a lot of other females.
Jillian is crazy. And I still can't figure out if she's broken through the crazy. Did you hear a beep, too?
I feel... No. Oh. I think that old ears don't hear those things.
yeah, maybe.
I think she has absolutely broken through the crazy. Mm-hmm. She's you know, she's settled down, and she's got it all under control. I think all the other people there are crazy, and she's letting the girls do their thing. But, no, I think she's razor-focused, and I think she played the... poor old me, I'm just a poor female victim card. Played that card hard enough in court that enabled her to be criminally insane or mental illness, and therefore we can't really convict her. And so she's with all these other people, and then once you give her that much space, she's able to get back to work. So it's like she's working the...
See, I completely disagree.
Really?
I will agree.
Right,
I will agree.
Right, so I yield.
I will,
see,
totally,
I
will totally agree that Jillian knows how to work it. That's what she's given us season after season.
And
now we get to see her work it in kind of a female scenario,
and?
Which is great. But that very end where she's holding the papers and she's talking to the pen, and we get a little bit of a rambly monologue with a crazy
what
look in her
say?
Eye. Yeah, I can't quote you word for word.
Right.
But the woman basically says, don't write any crazy letters to the president. And she goes, I just need to get my thoughts down or something.
But I think she's talking rhetorically. I think, I don't know, I think.
I think that that's telling us that there is going to be some sort of crazy letter. It's not going to the president, but you're not bringing.
Okay.
You're not bringing Jillian into the picture to have Jillian release her thoughts. You're having Jillian in the picture to get something moving.
But you don't think she knows that to get something moving? You think she wants to spend the next 60 years in a mental asylum?
I think she's probably fixated on something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what her agenda is. But Jillian always has a focus. Whether it's like she needs money,
but
whether
it's a crazy
or not
focus,
she needs
or it's
Jimmy,
a
or whether it's,
right.
it's a crazy focus.
So it's not a focus on get me out of here.
I don't know. I don't know what it's a focus on, but Jillian will always have a bit of crazy to her.
Okay, true. So could it be a little bit of both of what we're talking about? Is it are we meeting halfway here?
Do you want to compromise today?
I think no. Maybe we're
I'm
going to
say what does John say, and then
no, you can't ask him because he gets into spoiler places. You can't ask him that. That's not fair.
Darn it!
So I wish we could, but we can't. I'm being respectful, but I think that this isn't just a crazy lady. You saw all the other crazies there. She knew what to do. She knew to make a deal with the mother hen lady. Mm-hmm. And she's aware. Now, is her plan as good as a Nucky plan or this where she's trying to take over the world?
She knows
no.
how to facilitate her plans, but her plans are crazy. That's what I'm
but
trying to say.
She's always been crazy.
I know.
But
well, she's always been an opportunist.
Yes.
But not necessarily
who's willing to be crazy.
One.
Yeah, she's like a maniacal opportunist.
Absolutely. No one's denying that. But an opportunist who's willing to go cray-cray to get what she wants.
True.
And maybe what she wants is totally insane. But I just looked at that room of other women, and she was the sharpest tack in the drawer.
Okay. She might be the sharpest tack. She's the smartest. I'll give her that.
And she
I
was more sane than those other women. Those other women were
more,
way more
crazy. They're just insane in a different way. She's still just as insane.
Right, let's move
it's
on.
Like, this is what I'm going to say.
Because
like,
John can't get
like,
involved. We're annoying him.
I'm sorry, John.
He's bored wherever he is. We don't want to bore him. Next thing.
Well,
I love her, by the way. She's great.
We all love Jillian. She's fantastic.
I'm excited as you guys are to see how it turns out.
See? She's someone that I'm excited they brought back. We are going to go into a little bit of a prediction section.
Wait, John.
I can't.
Do we get? We covered everything.
I mean, there's a lot to cover.
What else? New York? Are we good?
We talked about New York. I'm sure the fans will let us know what we've missed because we ran through this episode, and so they're going to have.
No, we're good. You're right. We're good.
And there was so much.
Yeah, exactly.
But
they communicate with us. So, guys, if you're listening, you know, comment. Tell us what
we missed. And HBO, F you for only giving us 6 more seasons. I'm sorry, Sarah. I'm sorry. And we got a lot
of... Don't say that
to
HBO.
I love HBO. No, they're great to us at AfterBuzz. But a lot of people wrote us from on YouTube and on iTunes saying, why can't we go to Netflix? And you know what? I agree. By the way, just throwing it out there, Netflix is already kicking ass. Okay, yes. They've got Orange Is the New Black. They're winning tons of awards and Emmys and whatever. But for Hulu and Amazon, a Crackle, all these other platforms, you know, here's what I'm saying: go for it. Grab this thing. Take this show. You know, write a check. Take it, and you know what? You'll be right in the game. You'll
I mean,
be
as
right
a fan,
in the game
I
with
totally
the bigs.
Agree with you.
Just saying,
as a fan, I totally agree with you because we want to see more.
Right,
obviously.
Just saying. You'll be in the bigs.
I have no power
write the check.
In this world.
Write the check. Take all the money. Write the check on this, and you're boom. You're in the game. You're right there with the bigs.
Perfect.
Honestly, if you were a business person, could I just ask Sarah and John.
Sarah and John. John, get ready.
Both of you are artists. Both of you are trained in your craft. But I'm going to just ask you. If you were one of the... Okay, HBO, creme de la creme. Mm-hmm. Showtime, mm-hmm. Fine, and obviously the networks. But if you were a smaller platform, and not Netflix, Netflix has made its mark. But remember, Ted Sarandos at Netflix,
He
threw his long bomb with Orange Is the New Black, and with the other shows he's done. What am I missing? There's one other like huge one. I mean, House of Lies. Right. Okay. So you're one of these other venues. You've got a ton of hedge fund money.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna say, wouldn't it make business sense to write the check and get two seasons of this and make your network? You'd be right up there with everything else if you took this show.
I mean, it definitely could be a good idea. John, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I mean, more of this show is always good, and it's good quality material. And
like I get HBO is not going to go out of business if they lose this. Fine, I cop to it. We've said from the beginning they're spending a lot of money on this. Maybe they're not getting the crazy numbers that Game of Thrones is getting. Fiscally, I understand. But if you are another platform,
jump on it.
Right, because you immediately you're right there. You're right behind an HBO, a Showtime. Just, you know, you might not take this show and take down HBO, but you know what? You're in that class. So anyway, it's our fans who were saying this. I said, you know what? Geez, you're right.
The fans are still demanding it. So maybe someone else step up, but we have no idea. We need to get to predictions. John, you're welcome to stay with us.
He's
still talking to me. But I'm assuming you can't give away.
Maybe I should turn out for the prediction.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to pressure you for
you
spoilers.
Know what? John, we'll handle predictions, but please feel free to call us. And, you know, John, I'm just such a huge fan of the show. And
you did a wonderful job.
From the first time I saw you, I said, oh, my God, this guy's got it. You nailed Dabney Coleman. And so just so you know, for whatever it means, you're a friend of AfterBuzz from here on in. And whatever we can do to support you, your career, your endeavors, your future movies and TV shows, we're all in. You have our information. Please feel free. And maybe we'll hear from you before the season's up.
And we do offer...
Thanks so much.
No, thank you. Also, we do... Our fans love to reach out to you guys. If you have a Twitter or social media you want to plug to give out to fans so they can find you, do you have anything like that?
I'm at ConJohnLee, ConJohnLee on Twitter.
Perfect. So fans can now find you. Thank you again so much. We love having you.
And I'm as excited as you guys are to see where this thing goes.
Yes, right? So are we.
We're pumped. All right. Thank you, John.
Awesome.
All right, predictions, Sarah.
Good night.
Bye, John. Good night. Sarah, take us through this really fast. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say, who is Jillian contacting? I want her to contact the Cotton Club. That's where I want her going.
Holy crap. Well, we know Narcisse. He's been teased early on, but now we're going to see him next week. So we think that's the Cotton Club.
I mean,
wow,
I don't know, but that's the type of scenario where I want to see Jillian in. I don't know if that's actually where it's going. But she just deals so well with a little bit of the crazy and hectic and the women. And she just thrives in that area, especially where, like, sex is involved. Come on. That's her strong point. She used to work
sex
in it.
Sex and power.
She used to be a performer. That's where I'm hoping her direction is headed. Because if not, I'm like, who is she reaching out to? The only people, who are the other people she knows that are left alive? It's hard.
She knows Lucky. Remember?
He does know Lucky.
Knows Lucky.
There we go. That's another one.
And he was impressed by her.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, we know Lucky and them want to take out Nucky.
And Jillian could play a factor. And,
that's right. And she's got a horse in that race, so to speak.
That is
so
true. Know,
so we're gonna and we're gonna see more of Joe Kennedy.
So more of Joe Kennedy. More of Chalky coming back with his new partner.
Finally, Chalky. Yeah.
I don't even know what to call him.
God, I just hope Chalky gets either a stake in Atlantic City or, man, I want to see him get some comeuppance at the Cotton Club.
We're gonna find out.
Do you know anything about Joe Kennedy?
A little bit, but not as much as you do.
I mean, just. Allegedly, a major bootlegger that made not just millions, but tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions, and back then, which would be billions today.
Yep.
And his whole thing was making sure one of them got to the presidency. One of the boys, so it was Joseph, who died tragically in World War II, so he didn't get the nod. And then it was John, who he didn't expect because he thought he was a little bit too much of a playboy, and let you know that he was like the man. And then after John, he thought Robert, and then Robert was killed. And then after Robert, Ted had Chappaquiddick, and it was always believed that it was a classic example of the sins of the father. So the father had done all these things to
guys. There's your history lesson
to make
to
his
get
money
prepared because that's a
well,
big story.
It was always that the sins of the father had afflicted all of his children and cursed them.
That's
family. I'm not saying it's true.
And just off my head, very interesting parallel to Nucky.
Yes.
And this show having a huge, just always reoccurring theme of father son instances. Like it's always
and karma
been there.
And the sins of the dad revisiting the.
Yep. Keeps happening.
So.
And Kevin, do you have a place where they can find you?
At Undergaro. Come say hi.
You
and
can
Sarah,
find me here.
Awesome job tonight. Thank you so much for stepping in.
No problem.
Next week, Charlie's going to be back.
Yep. And soon in the near future, we're also going to have Miss Bethany.
Bethany will be back as well. Thank God.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.